So I want to talk a little bit about what we did here last week and tie it into this week. And it's kind of really core to meditation and to our life in general. And that is this, that there's one awareness experienced by different people in different ways at different times. Teachings that talk about levels of awareness confuse human beings, and we're already confused enough. The simplification, the neutralization, the equality move, the justice move, is to recognize that awareness, the awareness that's happening in this room right now, is one awareness that each of us has, you could say, a part in. Okay? One awareness experienced by different people in different ways at different times. Within that, there is what we could call our ordinary daily awareness, taking care of business awareness, which often has a fair amount of our story about life in it. Our story about life, our story about ourselves, happens up here. When your story about your life, other people's lives, the world we live in, gets going strongly enough in the neurology of this, it manifests not only as thoughts, but as feelings, as sensations, and pretty soon there's a bodily experience that is colored by the story. For example, all you have to have is a very strong emotion come into your life in a given moment. And a lot of times with emotions, we don't experience them fully. We actually are defended and guarded against our own feelings. We're protective, defensive, aversive, actually fearful to experience the full nature of our emotional life. So we have a somewhat truncated, partial experience of emotions. And this also goes into what we were taught, how we were conditioned about these feelings by people who also had conditioning. So if you think about your family of origin, you might have been in a family where certain kinds of feelings were more acceptable and certain kinds of other feelings were less acceptable. In some families, feelings aren't really acceptable at all. We don't do feelings. We don't do anger. Sadness doesn't really get much, you know, commerce. We don't do sadness. We don't do grief. If we do grief, we only do it for a short period of time. Let's get going. Or we overdo grief and we just stay there. Depression's okay. It's not okay. Anxiety's okay. It's not okay. If you stop and you go, just go, wait a minute. These things I'm talking about are things that every human being experiences more or less in their life. So the awakening or the meditative journey is to open up to the truth, to experience things as they are with less and less filtration and defensiveness. That's the possibility. So ordinary awareness has a lot of the story that has been concocted in your brain. Comes and goes to varying degrees, and at times the story takes over. You notice this? The story can take over to such an extent that you truly believe the story. You believe you really know who another person is, and then they do something that's outside your story. And you go, whoa, that doesn't fit. And all of a sudden your story's either got to change and accommodate to that, or your story might reject that. They're human beings. When it doesn't work well between them and another human being, they just blow it off. And they turn and they never come back. They just walk away. You dissed me, you went too far, I'm not doing you anymore. There's other human beings who do the exact opposite of that. You do something very egregious, let's say, can fill in the story about what that is, right? And they're human beings who turn right towards that, and they go right towards that, and they open up, and they embrace the difficulties, and they stay in that until it's resolved. They go right through it. I'm not saying there's rights and wrongs here, although you could have a story about that. I'm just saying these things happen. Your story, ultimately, is your story. It's got your particular biases in it, it's got your particular prejudices in it, it's got your particular traits and tendencies in it. It's very unique. We went around the room and said, okay, 5 minutes, tell us the essence of your story about your life or the world. What's the story in your head? I talked to a human being today. This human being said to me, when I have repetitive thoughts, thoughts that keep coming around like a broken record, my conclusion about what to do about those thoughts is to repress them. I said, okay. I decided that I would share my own experience of repetitive thoughts. I said, when I have repetitive thoughts, my experience is these are telling me they need something. That's why they keep knocking. Very different. Those are two different stories, aren't they? Really different, that are going to bring different results. If we want to see how things bring results, we got to stay with what's happening, you could say, long enough to watch where it's going. And what we often don't see, because it's a very intimate thing to see, very close to see, is that in our mind we are cultivating something all the time. Do we care enough about our life to recognize what we're cultivating? And here's an even more interesting angle for me. Have we considered where it's going? Have we considered what we're cultivating is taking us someplace? Interesting? Compelling? Challenging? So if I'm in my story about myself, about you, about us, about this, about that, whatever, and this story, you could say, governs me, runs me, dictates life for me. That's a very different life than what some people call the life of being present. Now, we talk about being present, and for some people what that means is you actually drop out of the story to some extent. You see that the story is actually a dream. It's make-believe, and you are writing it. Even people who just drop down from here into here enough, and that word enough varies for each of us a bit, drop down in here enough to begin to really connect to this rhythmic process of breathing, and they notice, what? This slows down a little bit, it relaxes, there's more space between the thoughts, sometimes the thoughts stop, the story goes away. You forget about what time it is, you don't care. You know what? Time is part of the story. So is purpose, so is direction, so is the past. And this is a lot about what happens in ordinary awareness. I have my role, I have my job, I have my identity. It's called ordinary awareness. Embedded in that, as I mentioned last week, there's what we call meditative awareness. Meditative awareness is what gets awakened or cultivated through spiritual practice. The spiritual practice, if it's actually a spiritual practice, could be Tai Chi, it could be Aikido, it could be Qigong, it could be meditation, it could be Hatha Yoga, it could be Raja Yoga, it could be Karma Yoga, it could be Bhakti Yoga. It could be walking down the street and really experiencing that walking, not being in a story about the walking and not thinking about where I'm going, but really experiencing the actual walking. That could be the spiritual practice. Anything we're doing actually could be a or the spiritual practice. Caring for other people. There's many people inside the hospice movement, and it is a movement in the United States of America and worldwide, that completely understand that what they're doing to help other people die peacefully and in comfort is their spiritual practice. They are completely connected to that. And I'm talking from direct experience of having met such human beings. What's your spiritual practice? It's okay to not know, because if you don't know and you're looking, then that's part of your spiritual practice. You might say, well, I'm not really clear yet, I'm not really sure, I need to shop a little bit. Good. But don't shop your whole life. If it resonates enough, and what I'm saying is, there's a connection that's real, that's tangible, that you say, this is trustworthy. I trust this. Go with it. The first person that I learned Vipassana meditation from, in a serious way, passed away on Monday. His name was S.N. Goenka. He was a Indian gentleman, and I mean gentleman intentionally. He was a very gentle man who was born a Hindu, staunch Hindu. The last thing you want to do if you're a staunch Hindu or other types of staunch religious types is leave your religion and go to another religion. No, 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 no. You don't do that. That's bad. That's a story, right? He is born into a family of wealthy textile business people. By the time he's 21 years old or 20, he's got massive migraine headaches. They got a ton of money so he can go to China, or rather Japan. He could go to Germany, United States, Canada. He can go to the best doctors in the world to get treated for this migraine headache condition. He tells the story. When he was alive, he told this story. I remember it very clearly. He said, to my great fortune, none of them could help me. Came back empty-handed. Still got migraine headaches. Any kind of chronic pain, if you don't really know how to work with it, it takes your life and absorbs it. Depressions can do this too. You could have a really strong meditation. Chronic pain will say, you're going to have to get me sorted or I've got you. Depression can do it too. Anxiety can do it. Comes back to his native country, still struggling. His spiritual practice, his prayers aren't cutting it. The business within the family, large business, they move it to Burma. And so over he goes to Burma. And he hears about a teacher of Vipassana, insight meditation. And he's attracted. He doesn't really know what it is, but he's attracted. And his mind is going, you can't go to this. You can't go to this teacher. You can't do this. You can't. And he just cannot help but be pulled. So he goes to the teacher and he talks to him about, what is this man teaching? I want to find out what you're doing. The man explains this to some extent, and I'll mention who this man was in a minute. And he's communicating his story in a way that says, I have these migraine headaches, is this going to help me? And the teacher, at a certain point, says, if that's what you're looking for, go. Go. That's not what this is about. And he realizes that he's, in a certain sense, offended the teacher. And so they continue to converse. The teacher says, this is not about your physical condition. This is not about your emotional condition. This is not even about your mental condition. This is the Dharma, or in that language at that time, he used the word Dhamma. This is the Dhamma. This is the truth of the way things are. If something beneficial happens for this body or this mind on any of those other kind of symptomatic places, it's a byproduct. Do you want this or not? He understands. He goes, got it. In the back of his mind, he goes, but I'll remain a staunch Hindu. So he's going to do this Buddhist practice, but I'm going to remain a staunch Hindu. He does a 10-day meditation, so he does 10 days. We just did 45 minutes. 10 days. So much transformation happens. So many changes happen. So much opening happens. His life transforms. And you can imagine how compelling it was for him to watch the migraine headaches go away. I should add that the reason why, in part, he ended up with this teacher is because one of his friends, friends are fun to have sometimes, his friend said, I think your situation, your symptoms, your pattern is psychosomatic. And it makes sense to me, at least, because you haven't gotten any benefit from any of these medications and any of these treatments that you've gotten. The treatments are a little different now, in 2013, than they were, say, in the 50s, 60s for migraines. They're not really that much different. I should back up. He got on morphine for the headaches, and he was taking so much morphine, another friend said to him, if you keep taking that morphine, the effect of that is going to be, you're going to have to take morphine to deal with the effects of the morphine. Do you see where you're going? This is really bad. 10 days of the meditation transforms him so much. He becomes a true disciple. A disciple is someone who isn't compelled to discipline themselves. A true disciple is someone who has their life taken over by discipleship. It's what totally shifts the motivation to be or to live. That's what a true devotee is. The truth takes over. He becomes a compelling teacher. He becomes a wonderful teacher. Very charismatic. I meet him in the 80s. I spend 5 years studying with him. I thought I'd never leave. I thought, this is it. That's a story. And after 5 years, another story came in. And I stopped studying with him. But I never lost, to the second, my love and affection for him and the way he cared for everybody so deeply. Full of compassion, full of metta. Many other stories are there, but I mention him because he's a man who devoted himself to this meditative awareness. So what happens as this meditative awareness wakes up out of ordinary awareness, is this meditative awareness is recognized. There's an awareness that isn't bias, that isn't prejudice, that actually sees the story. And it sees the story perhaps in very gross ways at first, like, wow, I have a mind in my monkey mind, or my moving mind, as they call it in Tibetan Buddhism, my moving mind. In my moving mind, I have a lot of desire at times. I feel unfulfilled. I want things I don't have. And that disturbs me. But I can't help but have that feeling sometimes of wanting things I don't have. This meditative awareness sees another kind of story. It sees, wow, there's fear in my mind. It's not investigated. It's very primal. It's very disturbing. It really rocks my life. There's suffering in it. Multiplicity of different aspects of the story start to be seen. Instead of being absorbed in the story, one can see the story. And in that meditative awareness, it allows space to begin to open up around and in all things. All aspects of life start to actually, seemingly at least for periods of time, open up. But I particularly wanted to focus on the way that this meditative awareness influences the story. Because there's two places where human beings live. Very simply. They live in the story, which is living in the contents of their mind, or they live in and eventually recognize that they are reality. And that recognition that you are reality actually opens up into an inclusiveness of the story. The story comes back, you could say, in a way that allows it to become an interesting movie. Rather than who you are, it becomes an interesting movie that's playing on a screen, to give it an image. And whether you think you are the screen that the movie plays on, or that which sees the screen, that puts it in two different positions, doesn't it? Either or both. The effect is that the story is liberated from the tendency to fix and identify it as what you are exclusively. This is called a kind of freedom. If you think the meditative awareness, when it really works, dissolves the story and that's it, there's no more story. Like the personality, which is part of the story, goes away. Doesn't work like that. It can go away for a while, but it comes back. Just like your feet. Somebody the other day told me, yeah, I had a lot of paralytic type sensations that actually went into numbness on the top of my feet. I did a bunch of physical therapy. I got my feet back. Which means I feel the feet again. The feet are alive again, feeling comfortable again, so forth. Sensations sort of balanced out. Got freed up. The neurology got sorted. Personality, same thing. The difference is, instead of the personality being that which is driving the ship or the car of your life, the personality relaxes like a tight muscle and doesn't need to be the center of attention. And what that does is it liberates the sense of neediness that we sometimes feel. Neediness, very subtle neediness. Get anxious if somebody who we're attached to goes a little too far away. Or even more anxious if someone that we're attached to passes away. I'm guessing that if this teacher that I mentioned passed away when I was working closely with him, it would have ripped me apart because I was really focused on him and what he was giving me. But I just celebrate his life now. I'm so happy. He lived 90 years. He gave and gave and gave, traveled all over the world. And by the way, you can look him up if you want. He's one of the most well-regarded and revered Vipassana meditation teachers of our generation. Taught all over the world, multiplicity of centers all over the world. There's one right up in Georgia, South Georgia, is a lovely center. It all goes by very fast. Even 90 years in a way can go by seemingly pretty fast. So what's important then? Well, the suggestion here is that meditative awareness is inherent in our being. It's inherent as part of what we are. But in most cases, it needs to be encouraged or coaxed to wake up. It needs support. That doesn't mean it needs you to sit every day and cross your legs a certain way and not move. That's a technique. It needs to be recognized so that it can begin to infuse your life with what? Light. As an analogy, in a way, for what this awareness is. It's light. It's like the light in this room illuminates the room, right? Meditative awareness illuminates your life. It lets you see what's really going on. And so that content, that story that has this contentful, flowing pattern, sometimes repetitive, cyclical quality to it, certain kinds of feelings that tend to repeat, certain kinds of sensations that tend to repeat, certain kinds of story thoughts that tend to repeat, how about memories that keep coming back? You know what that's usually telling me, at least? Look here. Look here. Pay attention. Just like a sensation in the body that hurts. Pay attention. Tune in. What is called for? So that meditative awareness begins to loosen up the sense of fixed identity. The identification on the body-mind process is what you are, the identification with the story. It loosens up these contents of the story so that what happens is you begin to, and this is a very classic Buddhist psychology teaching right now, the difference between content and process opens up. Content, story, thoughts, situations, events, memories, plans, imaginations, fantasies, etc., sensations, viewed a certain way. My body, yeah, that's content. Interpretation of the sensations. Process level opens up. What's the process level? Process level is a meditative awareness, or the light, illuminates the fact that all this content is actually a process. What is this process? This process is an ever-changing, ephemeral, unfolding, unsolid, non-solid, actual, you could call it, field of energy. And that which you call yourself, yeah, whatever you call yourself, is actually part of that. And so what you call yourself actually becomes clearly recognized as a process of unfolding energy, unfolding form, insubstantial. And then the curiosity will arise when that gets clear enough. The curiosity will arise, well, if this is what I am, if this is all I am, then this is dying. This process is being born and dying. It's arising and passing. There's nothing solid here. Is this what I really am? This Goenka used to describe this as bunga, dissolution. And then he talked about that, total dissolution. That was very scary for me to hear as he talked about that. And then it started to happen, like the body would dissolve in meditation. And then this fear would come and... Boy, that'll bring you back. Right? Boom. Like, tighten up. Total dissolution of the solidity. This body is not solid. It's completely porous. There's more space between the molecules than there are molecules. Put it under the scope and we could see this. So we're going to experience that, and what it does is it loosens up the identification. It loosens up the tendency to cling and to grasp and to resist the flow of life. And this feels very good. It feels very freeing. But it's transitory. Nothing lasts. Even the sense of identification is just part of the story. Nothing solid there, doesn't last. Instead of this being something that is conceptual or theoretical, it wakes up experientially. And that's what the meditative awareness does, is it wakes up these things I'm pointing at factually. That's what the Dharma is about. It's about seeing life as it truly is, free from bias, free from interpretation, free from prejudice. And if bias or prejudice is there, that's recognized. Oh, look, part of the story. So careful now, because we can start thinking the name of the game is to get rid of the story. Absolutely not. In one sense, the name of the game is for the story to actually be awakened. When the story is awakened with this light of awareness, it's like somebody performing, let's say, and they can be doing this with music, or they could be doing this with drama, and they have a kind of a liberated sort of moment or set of minutes. I watched Marcel Marceau on stage in this town at the Phillips Center. I waited like 20 years to see this guy, and then he came here. My first feeling was one of disappointment, because there was only like 40 people in the audience. It's a big auditorium, you know it. Very, very small audience. And he just did this performance, and there were times when my mind could not follow. Is he moving or still? Like, I lost touch with that. I was on the edge of tears mostly just watching this artist. He was at the end of his career. Talk about meditative awareness in movement. Keith Jarrett in the Cold concert. He just goes into this space that is just clearly, completely and utterly improvisational. And it sounds wonderful. It's transcending the limitations of pattern and conditioning and just opening. And we can't help but be touched when we recognize this. Because what's being mirrored to us is the same potential that's inherent inside all of us. So this isn't about the story is eradicated, neutralized, or if you want to talk about the ego, goes away. We're talking about the ego relaxes, so to speak, or is loosened up in its fixated, fisted tendency to need to be the center of the world, your world. It's like a tight muscle. That's what identification is. It's like a tight muscle. There's many other things that the meditative awareness affects. And there's no situation, there's no moment when it cannot be recognized. It gets forgotten. That's what ignorance means, in a sense, is to ignore the facts. But it comes back. Even if you try to not be aware, is an interesting one. Try to not be aware.
I guess we're ignoring what you're going to set out to do. That could be ignoring what you're going to set out to do.
Mm-hmm. Could be that as well. Yeah, you could set a plan and then have a counterpart of the plan to ignore what you set out to do. The hard thing, in sense with this, for some folks, is that your imaginations about what waking up is, your story about spiritual life or spiritual awakening is just a story. What meditative awareness does is it really neutralizes that game. And it brings the human to points of such humility and such vulnerability. A lot of human beings just don't want to do it. They'd rather stay a little bit more defended, you know, a little bit more in the story. I'm comfortable, my life's working. Yeah, I know, geez, I know that death is coming, you know, I know that I have limited time, but I'm okay. You know, I've done all right. I've got what I need. Some days I'll just hang with this. Try to play it safe. Got enough money, there's enough people who care about me. This is all the story. It's not right or wrong, it's just part of the way the mind can work. Meditative awareness is so safe. It's so trustworthy. It's so reliable. It's so pristine and so profoundly and simply, inherently, already free. And expressing that freedom initially as just a burst of everything's okay. Instead of just thinking that, it's like, boom, everything's okay just as it is. There isn't anything to figure out for a second. Everything's all right. And that changes. It's a taste. So when I talk about the story becoming awakened, okay, that's a whole really teaching there. Instead of this content, identified with the content, maybe struggling with parts of the content, okay with parts of the content, trying to change the content. A lot of therapies go after that. Let's change the content. Let's get you happier. Let's get you more comfortable. If you play that game, which some people need to because their life has so many symptoms in it, that if they just get relief of the symptoms and they feel a little bit better about themselves, people who didn't feel loved when they came here, didn't bond properly, their mother or father or caregiver didn't really connect with them and let them know they're lovable and welcome, creates a big scar. A person can meditate, meditate, and meditate, and their meditation is very, very, very stuck. Because underneath it, they don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel good about who they think they are. And they're looking to feel okay sometimes in the eyes of others. Like, I'll only be okay if you affirm to me, you reflect to me that I'm lovable. And of course, this is so, so unreliable. Even loving people can't keep it up in your direction all the time. So it thrusts you back to, oh, okay, now what? I'm alone. No one can experience my mind in the way that I do, or my heart, or my needs, or my desires. And instead of that becoming a problem, it's an amazing opportunity and situation. It's an amazing opportunity. Hiding there in the so-called problem is an amazing opportunity in the suffering. And it's meditative awareness that begins to shine the light in such a way that that shift can happen. And it generally happens for most people in their perception of this stuff gradually. So this story being like an anchor, right? You know what it's like if you've been in a boat and the boat's anchored and then you get the anchor out, the boat's free. Or even more sort of graphically, you know, you cut the cord. We're tied to our mothers and then cut the cord and then we breathe on our own. Amazing transition. We had that. We don't remember it, most cases. Life is only and utterly transition. What is transformation? It's transition. What is change? It's transformation. It's transition. Who are you? Are you just this transitory process of things unfolding? My own experience is the only way we can really begin to see beneath even this process of change into what are you really? What am I really? What is true? What is real beyond the transitoriness? Is through the power of this meditative awareness. One more point and then we'll sit again a little bit. In this meditative awareness is a particular aspect of it which is called choiceless awareness. This is very powerful because most of us derive a certain amount of, you could say, security pseudo, satisfaction pseudo, okayness pseudo, by believing we're in control. I can choose. And if I choose better, if I choose right, if I learn from my past and I don't make the mistakes again that I've made and I make the right choices, that is the ticket. I must do that. And then that story, that bubble, gets popped. And you make another mistake, so to speak. You mess up. You forgive yourself. You let go quickly. You go, it didn't entirely work. I cannot control life. Life is controlling me. It turns. So this choiceless awareness wakes up as an aspect of meditative awareness. And what this means is that whatever is arising in the meditation, whatever is arising in your life, is met or received choicelessly. What happens in that is that it's clear there's no better, there's no worse, there's no higher, there's no lower, except in the story. Things are just as they are. It's this amazing, beautiful, subtle, and tranquil neutralization. No sensation, better or worse, no thought, better or worse. Doesn't matter whether there's thinking or no thinking. Doesn't matter whether there's unpleasant sensation or pleasant sensation or no sensation. When I say it doesn't matter, that's not nihilism. What it is emptiness. Everything is recognized as empty. And then, that emptiness or that openness reveals the fullness, a sense of completeness. And then, all the minutiae, the blade of grass, the sensation, the thought, the perception, the memory, all that stuff that you could say was part of the story, with that light of awareness, that choiceless awareness, every single one of those things is the totality of the Dharma. Every single thing is shining. And for some people it's just like, of course. Of course. I always knew this in a way. I sensed this. I remember this. And for other people, they have a big emotional process that then comes up, and they get very, very emotional for a while, a lot of tears and joy, and maybe other things come out. They have a burst. You know, some of us are just more emotional than others, right? That calms down. It's not conceptual. Everything is shining with this light of truth. That's what choiceless awareness does. So before we sit again just a little bit, and let's see where you are at, just see if that choiceless awareness is available right now. Notice that which right now has no preference, has no bias, has no need. Just pointing at it. And if your mind goes to try to locate it, notice that it's completely and utterly unlocatable. That's the point. It can't be found like a thing, like the edge of the computer. It's not an object. So let's sit for a few minutes and just explore a little bit of this choiceless awareness. So I take a comfortable meditative posture with your back nice and easy. You want to sit for 5 minutes, 6, 7 minutes, something like that. See if you can just let the posture stay completely still, if that's possible. Don't impose it, but just see if that's available. And just let the silence in the room register. See if you can recognize how the silence isn't making any choices. Feel or sense the stillness of the body. And recognize that the stillness isn't making any choices. It's just being still. Recognize that the space in the room, sense the space, notice how it's not making any choices. The only thing that seems to be making choices is this place inside the brain. Let the head, the brain inside the head, just sit in the silent, still, open space that makes no choices. As we sit, whatever's happening, is just happening. Notice how whatever's happening is just happening freely, it's happening spontaneously. And if the idea of choosing arises, it arises in the brain, choiceless awareness sees that. Choiceless awareness completely neutral and balanced. Sees and receives all experience. Just recognizing that open awareness that doesn't interfere. It doesn't intrude. You could say it just lets everything be. Just like the space, just like the silence, just like the stillness. That's what choiceless awareness is. Silent. Still. And spacious. Okay, when you're ready, you can come on back into the room visually with each other and let your eyes open up again if they've been closed. So you could say that choiceless meditative awareness actually also reveals where you get hooked, where there's any hooks, where the friction is, where your mind's identified, where there's grasping or clinging. That gets very, very clear. The actual forces that cause unhappiness and suffering, they get very, very clear. So how was that? How was that to sit with that? Yeah, nice. It's not complicated. It's really uncomplicated. It's very ordinary, very simple. We've had many tastes of choiceless meditative awareness, but they don't always get recognized. So the practice helps us recognize them rather than miss them. Any questions about anything I said tonight?